Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Vav and Aleph, 14 lines down. We left off yesterday with Rabba's question about Shevet Apochatato B'damim Mahu. The case of the scenario in which there is a problem of unemployment, but there's also some sort of temporary diminishment in the value of the individual, which is that there's some sort of temporary damage that will rectify itself at some point in time. So the question was, do you pay for that temporary nezek? The Gemara tried to bring a proof from the statements about Chavalah by Aviv Imo and Chavalah by Yom HaKippurim. Gemara offered alternative explanations that didn't force us to come to a conclusion based on that. Therefore, we have no conclusive evidence as to which way it goes. But Rabbo had a question. And now the Gemara comments on that. Milta de Bayle de Rabbo. That which was a question for Rabbo, Pshita le de Abaye de Hachkisa, or the Rava le Hachkisa. Abaye and Rava take firm positions on this. Opposite positions, but they don't have it as a question like Rabba. So Rabba poses it as a question an unresolved issue, whereas Abai and Rabba see this as being a conclusive issue, but they conclude in different directions. Ditmar, Hikau al Yadov et Samta. This is the example that we brought yesterday. It hits his arm and then it shrivels up. But in the end, it will return to its former utility, its former function. Abai Amar noten lo Shevet Gidola, b'Shevet Kitana. You pay both the large unemployment and the small unemployment. If you look in Rashi, Shevet Gidola is the equivalent of Nezek. You pay Dmei Yado. You pay for the arm itself, or the equivalent of the Nezek. Remember, it's only a temporary diminishment in value, so you're going to auction off this individual with this temporary handicap. Now, the problem, as Tosafot mentioned yesterday, is that we're not certain, we're not 100% sure that it's going to come back. That uncertainty is going to cause the diminishment in value, and that'll be the assessment of the nezek. Shevet Ktana, according to Abaye, is the payment for his inability to work as a Shomer Kshuim. And now that he is bedridden, and he can't even do the basic, lowest level of work, then he's entitled to Shevet. So Shevet is the regular Shevet that you'd pay from the Chamisha Dvarim. Shevet Gedola is the equivalent of Nezek. So Abaye believes that in this situation, you pay Nezek and you pay Shevet. Rav Amar, enoten lo el dmei Shivto Shibachol Yom Vayom. Rabbi says you only pay for the unemployment. As Rashi notes over here, Shivto Shibachol Yom Vayom is not your standard type of Shevet, but Achi Achzor de Kadmuto Nutein Lo Bachol Yom Komosh Niskarim Polim Bashuk. That he pays him based on what Polim workers would be hired in the Shuk, but not Kishomek Shuim, not at the lowest level of work that he could possibly do, because he didn't get any Nezek. For Rava, we don't have the payment of Nezek. Since you don't have a payment of Nezek, then the unemployment is to capture more than otherwise would be captured in a normal unemployment. For Abaye, who says you do pay Nezek, Nezek already captures the unemployment from the higher level employment down to the Shomer Kshuim. What's missing is the Shomer Kshuim, and that's captured in the Shevet. According to Rava, who there is no payment of Nezek, then the only thing you have is unemployment. That unemployment has to capture not only his inability to be a Shomer Kshuim, but also has to capture his inability to work at a higher level than that, or what he could have otherwise done. Now, the truth is that the two should be very close in value, if not the same, because if you add up the Dmei Nezek, which is a temporary diminishment in value or incapacity, plus the Shevet, the unemployment at the base level of Shomer Kshuim, that should add up to what the value of the individual is on a daily basis, what he could have worked as, or the unemployment or disability would have collected for that, and that's what Rubber is proposing. There might be small differences because there are risks involved that people also will only pay up to a certain amount with the knowledge that there are possibilities or probabilities that it may not turn out to be that. And so therefore his sale price on the market as an Eved might be different than his disability or his unemployment for his inability or incapacity now that he can't work in his former job or whatever he could have earned money as. So there might be slight differences or small differences between them based on the nature of the assessment, but they should come out pretty close together, that which Abai and Rover are suggesting. Now, Itamar, Hakoteha Yad Eved Ivri, it's a totally new case, a case where an individual cuts off the arm of an Eved Ivri Shel Chavero, of his friend. Abai Amar Noten Lo Shevet Gidola Le'Eved, you give the larger unemployment, meaning the Demei Nezek goes to the Eved, B'Shevet Ktana L'Rav, and the basic unemployment goes to the master. So even though the master has a leasehold in this Eved Ivri, that's all he has. He has a right to his output, a right to his work. Now the Dmei Nezek, which is the actual loss of the arm, Abai says goes to the Eved, the unemployment, but here it's the basic unemployment of Shomek Shuim that goes to the master because he owns those output rights. Now the Balei HaTosafot point out that why should that be? Why shouldn't the master get the full amount, both the Shevet Ktana and the Shevet Gedola? Because beforehand, the Eved Ivri could work for him in that capacity, and that was the leasehold that he had in this Eved Ivri. Or that's what the entitlement he has in this Eved Ivri, the output of the Eved Ivri. So why is that given to the Eved Ivri and not to the master? So the Balei Tosafot explain over here that this individual is no different than a chole, than someone who falls ill. And there we say, Nistafcha Sadehu. It's the bad luck. It's your bad luck. You happen to get an Eved Ivri who fell ill. That's a master's bad luck that he got an Eved Ivri like that. Now even though, as Tosafot points out, if the Eved Ivri is really sick for 4 years, then we would not just say, oh, he's sick and you have to let it go and it's bad luck. There already, it's the majority of the time that he would be there. And therefore, that starts to become a problem in the Eved Ivri's capacity or fulfillment of what he's obligated to the Rav. Despite that, over here with regards to unemployment, we do not say that. The difference being that with regards to sickness, over there, the Eved is completely incapacitated. He can't do any work at all. And therefore, if he reaches a point of 4 years of not doing any work at all, that is significant enough already where he no longer looks like an Eved Ivri, is no longer fulfilling his obligations to the master. In our case, or scenario over here, the master will be paid based on the Shomek Shuim. And so even though he is losing, he's not losing completely. And since he's not losing completely, this whole 4 year rule does not apply. And even if the Eved is incapacitated for the remainder of the years that he's there with the Adon still is getting value, the value of him as a Shomer Kshuim. And therefore, it is sufficient to fulfill his obligation as an Eved Ivri. And the fact that he now gets a less functioning or a lower functioning Eved Ivri, that's his bad luck. And he can't blame anyone else for that. That's the way that the Balei HaTosafot clarify this position of Abaye. Now then, Rava says, Amar v'amar akol yinatein le'eved, v'lekach ben karka, v'harav ochel perot. So Rava's suggestion, the girsa that we have in our Gemara, is the girsa of Rashi. The girsa says that the entirety of the payment, for Rava there's no shevet ktana, shevet gdola, there's only one payment, which is the unemployment. But that unemployment is the full unemployment, and that is given to the Eved. But not given to him in terms of the payment becomes his, or rather we use that to purchase land, and then with the land we have the perot, the output of the land that belongs to the Adon. Or in essence, what we have done is simulated what the Eved Ivri would have provided for the Adon. The Eved Ivri provides output, perot, to the Adon. He owns his body. He possesses himself. The Adon is entitled to his output or his production. He has a leasehold in him. And so basically what we're doing is simulating that through karka. When we take the value of the quote-unquote unemployment and we invest it in karka, the karka has output. The output of that karka should then become, in essence, the replacement for the leasehold that the Adon had in the Eved. Is now coming through his leasehold in the property. And that's the way that the Adon will get compensated. And that's the way that Rashi explains it and the girsa that Rashi has. If you look in the Balei HaTosafot, Balei HaTosafot bring an alternate girsa which says, Rav Amar, Inatena kol l'rav. Everything goes to the master. V'chein garas Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel also has a similar girsa. U'b'sfarim ha'yeh ketuv ha'kol l'eved. He says, the Sfarim have ha'kol l'eved, which is Rashi's girsa. V'kasha, that's a problem. Shevik tana, lamaleya kol rav. I don't understand, Tosafot says, why the basic unemployment, which is his ability to act as a shomek shuim, why shouldn't that go to the master? Why does that go to the Eved? The Eved does not own his output now, and it really should belong to the master. Ella, hakol rav garsinan. Tosafot says the girsa here is not a kol Eved, rather a kol rav. And this is the way you explain it, that the shevet tana entirely goes to the Rav, goes to the master. The master's entitled to a basic level of output from the Eved Ivri, and that's the equivalent of his employment as a Shomek Shuim, and that belongs to the master entirely. The Shevet Gdola, which is the Dmei Nezek of the arm of the Eved Ivri, or Shevet Gdola in the parlance of Abaye, that goes to the, that you use that to buy land. That land will belong to the Eved, and the output of the land, or the perot of the land, will belong to the master. So the master will get paid in two manners. he'll get paid through Veshevet Ktana, which is the baseline of what he's entitled to and makes him that he's now gotten what he could out of his Eved Ivri. In addition to that, the Shevet Gdola, the Dmei Nezek, which belongs to the Eved Ivri, will be invested in karka that has output, and that output will belong to the Adon, because that's what he gets. That's what he's entitled to from the purchase of this Eved Ivri. And that's the Girsa of Tosafot, which says, rather than Akol the Eved, rather Akol Yinatein the Rav. Mar says, Pshita, Pichet Eitel Atzmo, Veitel Rabo Lo Pichet. If there was diminishment in value of the Eved, but his master suffered no loss, and Hechi Dami, what's a scenario like that? The Paske the Reish Onei, or the Reish Nechire, he cut off the part of his ear, or cut off a part of his nose, Akol Atzmo. It's clear there that everything belongs to the Eved, because the Adon has lost nothing over here. The Adon still has a fully functional Eved, and he has lost no money here. The Eved himself obviously has a lost out because of the disfigurement that has been caused. Now, in some of the Rishonim note over here, if there is no damage, then why is there compensation at all? You need Nezek for there to be compensation. So what they suggest is that, yes, in terms of real loss in value, the master lose no functionality from this disfigurement of the Eved. Nevertheless, if he's coming to purchase an Eved, and you have one Eved that has a full nose and a full ear, and one that's missing his ear, missing his nose, someone will pay more money for an Eved with the ear and nose than one without the ear and nose. So there is a value that people will place on that, or people will pay or purchase with that, to not have someone who is disfigured. So there is obviously a differential in that price, and that is what would be the Nezek. That Nezek, or all that, belongs to the Eved, because again, the diminishment in value is having no impact on the master. Therefore, that Gemara says, no question, all of that goes to the Eved. Pichet Eitzel Rabo, again, the Girsa that we have here is Pichet Eitzel Rabo. Rashi says when it says Pichet Eitzel Rabo, it means Af Eitzel Rabo, also for his master, meaning that there's a loss both to the Eved and to the Rav. That's Plukta Debai V'Rova. That's the Machloka Debai in Rova. Tosfot over here plays around with different Girsaot. You can see that in the Tosfot, he says, Pichet Eitzel Rabo, Lo Garsinan, Ve'Eitzel Atzmo, Lo Pichet. It doesn't say that there was no loss to the Eved, but rather it means that there's a loss to both parties, as Rashi says over here. Even though, as Tosfot says, that Girsa is somewhat problematic, because of course, where there's a loss to the Eved, and there's a loss to a Rav, that is the Machloket of Bayin Rava, that's explicit. So then, why do you need to tell me that? So then Tosfot goes back to Bedochak to try to explain the Girsa that says it's Pichet El Terabo, below Pichet El Teletzmo, the case where there was damage for the master and not a damage to the Eved. That is the Machloket of Bayin Rava, is in a scenario where the Eved loses the function of his arm, but it will heal or go back to its normal functionality by the end of his term as an Eved Ivri. So as far as he's concerned, he has no loss here because the output right now belongs to the Adon. And by the time he becomes autonomous again, he will have his functionality back. So as far as the Eved is concerned, there's no real damage to him. All the damage really lies with the master, with the Adon. And that's what the Ri suggests may be the explanation over here. And then, based on that, we say that's still the Plukta de Bayin Rava. That is the Machloket of Bayin Rava in a case where there is this temporary damage, and then it would make this whole scenario here akin to the machloka we saw in Bayin Rava before, when we first explained this, and the Pashtut way to explain is that this has nothing to do with the cases before. It's a completely independent case. It's nothing to do with temporary damage. But once you explain it the way that the Reed does, or the Bayin Tosavot, then it becomes that this scenario is also a case of temporary damage, and that's where the machloka, the Bayin Rava, is found. Right now we move on to the last piece of the Mishnah, which is Boshet. Of the five things, Boshet is the one that gets knocked out the most, because we'll see here there are certain principles about Boshet which eliminate it, even in cases where you're paying for the other four things. Where it says, Boshet akol lufi amivayesh v'amitvayesh. That's what our Mishnah says, that the Boshet, the embarrassment, has to do with the party that is the Mazik and the Nizak, what their status is, and how much they are embarrassed. Mani Matnitin, who's the author of our Mishnah? Lo Rabbi Meir, Velo Rabbi Yehuda. It can't be Rabbi Meir, can't be Rabbi Yehuda. El Rabbi Shimon, he must be Rabbi Shimon. The Tanya, we have a Braita. Bekulan ro'in otan ki'ilu heim b'nei chorin she'ardu m'nichsehem. That we look at all people on a level of equality, which is that they are free people that were once wealthy and have lost that wealth. Shnehein b'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. They are the children of Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir is trying here to do something that we generally do with dinei derabbanan, as well as cases of assessment, which is we try to objectify the halacha. We don't want it to be a subjective halacha. We'd much rather have it be an objective halacha, and that way we have means and rules by which we can then govern these situations. Now, by the definition of busha, which is very personal and subjective, it's much harder to make it objective. What Rabbi Meir says is that we look at everybody on a level playing field. And therefore, embarrassment is an objective assessment, no matter what the status of the mazik or the nizak is. And that obviously does not conform with our Mishnah, and Rabbi Meir cannot be the author of our Mishnah. Then we have Rabbi Yehuda's position, Omer, HaGodol Lifi Godlo, VeKatan Lifi Kadno, that the one who is greater is based on his greatness, and the one who is smaller, it's based on his smallness. Meaning, it would seem that Rabbi Yehuda would be the best choice right now for the author of our Mishnah, which is that Rabbi Yehuda says it all depends on the individual. It's all subjective. And that's exactly what our Mishnah says. And we'll see in a second why Rabbi Yehuda can't be the author of our Mishnah. Right? Gadol and Katan over here does not mean a minor and a person of age. It means someone of higher stature or lower stature. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ashirin, when you're dealing with wealthy people, Ro'in Natan, Kiluhein, B'nei Chorin, She'adu M'nichseem. Look at them as individuals who are free people who have lost their wealth. Aniyim kibichutim shibehen. When you look at the poor people, you look at the lowest level or the bottom rung of society. So Mani, who is the author of our Mishnah over here? E Rabbi Meir, if it's Rabbi Meir, Matnitan Tanya Kodufiya Mibayesh or Mitbayesh, our Mishnah says it's completely subjective. Rabbi Meir, Kulu Bahade Adodininu. And Rabbi Meir says everybody gets painted by the same brush, and there is no differentiation. So for Rabbi Meir, it's all equal. And it's all objective, and our Mishnah is saying subjective. That's how we know that Rabbi Meir is not the author of the Mishnah. Be'i Rabbi Yehuda, Matznit and Ktani. Our Mishnah says, not the Mishnah we saw before, but the upcoming Mishnah on the Amud Bet, says, HaMevayesh et HaSumah Chayav. Someone who embarrasses a Sumah is Chayav. Be'i Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Sumah ain't no Boshet. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says, the Sumah doesn't have a din in Boshet. So Rabbi Yehuda can't be the author of the Mishnah, because the latter half of the Mishnah disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda's position with regards to a suma. Elalav, Rabbi Shimon, it must be Rabbi Shimon. Now, even though, again, Rabbi Shimon has an interesting distinction or way that he calculates it, which is, there is two categories, the category of the Ashirim, and there's the category of the Aniim. With the Ashirim, we look at them as if they were Ashirim that lost their wealth. Aniim, we look at them at the lowest rung of society. So Tosafot explains over here that the problem we have, and again, this is the nikudah by which the Tanaim over here are arguing about or trying to solve, which is this problem of objectifying the issue. So even according to Rabbi Shimon, he says that when you deal with Ashirim, there is a spectrum of Ashirim. And therefore, you're going to get all different types of answers, and maybe even a possible answer that I would not accept any amount of money or pay any amount of money because of that busha. And then it would become impossible to assess the value of the busha. And so therefore, for two reasons, we set a standard by which we say all Ashirim are in this category and all Aniim are in this category. One of those is a halachic reason, which is a motzi mechavero la baraya. So since the burner of proof is the one who wants to extract the money, then the lowest Ashir is someone who was once wealthy and then lost all their wealth. The lowest Ani is chutin shebehen, is at the bottom of the barrel. So those individuals, at least at that level, you can say if he's an Ashir, you're not below that level of Ashir. You have to pay that minimum amount. If you're an Ani, you have to pay that minimum amount because there's nothing lower. To pay more than that, that would be a motzi mechavero levaraya, and therefore we do not compel him to pay that additional amount. That's one reason. The other reason being that we want to come up with an objective standard. And that's what the Balei Tosafot say over here. It's very hard to assess how individuals or how wealthy individuals would feel in all these different scenarios. So we take a baseline of, they're talking about wealthy individuals who lost their wealth, and what would be their standard in terms of busha, and that would apply to all Ashirim. And then Aim, again, we'll take the lowest denominator, and we'll assume that that is the busha that is assigned to the Aniim. So therefore, the Gemara concludes that Rabbi Shimon must be the author of our Mishnah. Where it says, Afilu Tema Rabbi Yehuda, even Rabbi Yehuda could be the author of the Mishnah, Kika my Rabbi Yehuda, when Rabbi Yehuda says Suma Ein Lo Boshet, when does it say that Suma doesn't get Boshet? That's Mishkal Minei. That's the take from him. Aval the Mitvale, to give him, Yehavina Lei. Mean that a Suma can be embarrassed. And if someone embarrasses the Suma, they would have to pay him. But a Suma cannot be held accountable for embarrassment that they do. And that would be what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Based on that, Rabbi Yehuda could also then fit into our Mishnah. Because Rabbi Yehuda's statement of Suma Ein Lo Boshet isn't necessarily at odds with our Mishnah that says that Amivayesh et the Suma Chayav. Because Rabbi Yehuda is speaking about the Suma is the one who is doing the act that causes the Busha. And there he says that there's no din of Busha. On the other hand, when it comes to being Mivayesh the Suma, then there would be a din in Busha. And that would then accord with our Mishnah, which says that the Suma has Boshet. V'hamig Tani Seifa. But what about the other part of the Seifa of the Mishnah that's coming up? Hamivayesh et hayashin, someone who embarrasses someone who's sleeping, chayav. V'yashin shibiyesh patur. But someone who's sleeping and causes embarrassment is patur. V'lok Tani Suma shibiyesh patur. Over there it doesn't say that a Suma that causes embarrassment is patur. From that you would conclude it makes no difference which way you are going with regards to the Suma. So if that's the case, it would make it hard for Rabbi Yehuda to be reconciled with our Mishnah, because you can't claim now that the din of Suma is different in Rabbi Yehuda's statement than it is in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda was talking about a Suma that caused embarrassment, and the Mishnah is talking about a Suma that was embarrassed. But now, based on the diuk we make out of the next line, that doesn't seem to be the case. Now the Gemara says, Ella mechavarta matnitin Rabbi Shimon. Better to conclude, or we have to go back to the original assumption, that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Shimon, because it would be hard to fit Rabbi Yehuda into the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says, Man tana ahad tanu rabbanan. Who is the author of this position? Nitkavein levayeshet katan. Person intends to embarrass. Now a katan we would think maybe is a minor. Ubiyeshet gadol, and instead he embarrassed someone of age. He pays the gadol the embarrassment that he was intending to cause, that which is causing to a minor. The vayesh et ha'eved, if he intended to be vayesh an eved kanani, ubiyesh et ben chorin, but instead he embarrassed a ben chorin, a free person, notain the ben chorin to make boshto shel eved. Again, he pays the ben chorin the amount of money you would have to pay for an eved in that scenario. So again, says money. Who's the author of this position? Lo Rabbi Meir, velo Rabbi Yehuda, velo Rabbi Shimon. None of the Tanaim that we just saw fit it. Kasalka datcha. The reason being that we think that the Braita is talking about the following scenario, which is Katan doesn't mean Katan like a minor, but rather Katan means Katan minechasim, someone who is less wealthy. Gadol means Gadol minechasim, and Gadol means here someone has more possessions or more property. So now, I Rabbi Meir, Hamar Kulhu Bahadeh Hadadi Ninu. According to Rabbi Meir, everybody's equal. So the fact that we have a differentiation between a Katan and a Gadol, someone with more or less means, is clearly not like the Shita of Rabbi Meir. V Rabbi Huda, Hamar Ein Lavadim Boshet. If you make Rabbi Huda the author of this position, the problem is that Rabbi Huda also believes that Avadim don't have Boshet. If Avadim don't have Boshet, it was just mentioned explicitly that if you intended to be a Vayesh an Eved, and instead of a Vayesh a Ben Chorin, you pay the Busha of an Eved to the Ben Chorin. And if Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein Abadim Boshet, it's not going to fit in. V'Rabbi Shimon, Amar Nitkavein, the Vayesh et Zeh, B'yesh et Zeh Patur. And if it's Rabbi Shimon explicitly states, if you intend to embarrass one individual, and instead embarrassed someone else, you are a Patur. My Taima, what's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon's position? Kiktala, it's like killing. Maktala Adimit Kavein Le. Just like by killing, unless you have intent to kill, it is of a premeditated state. Dichtiv va'arav lo v'kam alav. It says in Dvarim, v'chiyah ish sonel re'eu, V'arav lo b'kam alav yikol nefesh b'meit v'nasa l'charet arim ha'el. So v'arav lo means he lays in wait and ambush for him, b'kam alav, and then he goes to murder him. Again, it's a premeditated, intentional type of murder. And that means that if the intent was off, meaning that he was intending for A and instead killed B, that'd be a failure of v'arav lo b'kam alav. So boshet nami ad'mikaminle. So too, by boshet, we'll have the same din that you have to have intent in order for there to be a chiyuv of boshet. And we know that, dichtiv, because it says in the pasuk, in Parshat Ki Teitze, with regards to where we learn boshet from, then in order to protect her husband, she grabs the private parts of the other individual. So whether you learn that out of the word mivushav, or whether you learn it out of the vishalchayada, that there is intent over here, and it is premeditated in nature, that's when you're chayav for murder, that's when you're chayav for boshet. If you are lacking that kavanah, it won't be considered murder, it also will not be considered to be boshet. So even though there is busha that happened, we won't associate that busha with the mazik, because he didn't intend for it. Mar says, the olam Rabbi Yehuda. No, Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this position. Similar to the way we answered for Suma before, when Rabbi Yehuda says that Avadim don't have boshet, that's mitveluhu. That's to give them boshet. And if they are embarrassed, you don't pay them for that embarrassment. But on the other hand, we do assess them boshet. That means that since an Eved Kenani is a human being, he definitely has boshet. It might be of a lower form or a lower level because of the fact that he is so low down on the rungs of society, but nevertheless, he does have some form of boshet. The problem then is, he's not entitled to that boshet because he is an Eved Kenani. And so the truth is, Mesham Shaminilu, there is a value or there is an assessment of the level of embarrassment, but nevertheless, you're not going to pay that to the Eved, because the Eved is not entitled to that boshet. So then, for when Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein Avadim boshet, that means that the Avadim don't collect boshet. They're not entitled to boshet. But that doesn't mean you can't assess something based on an Eved. And that's what the Brayta said before, that Nitkavin Vayeshet to Eved, B'yeshet Ben Chorin, that there is a value to the busha of being Mevayesh and Eved. And that's what it means here, that even though Ein Avadim boshet, that's only in giving them that boshet, but there is that value or there is that level of boshet that is done, even if Eved himself does not collect it. Some say even Rabbi Meir can be the author here. Again, we said before, we made the assumption that gadol and katan had to do with the possessions of the individual, of a higher level of possessions or a lower level of possessions. You don't have to say it. No, we could say gadol, gadol mamash. For katan, katan mamash. Gadol means literally someone of age, and katan means a minor. The Gemara says about that, well, if katan here means a minor, but katan barboshetu? Since when is a katan an individual that gets embarrassed? He is too young to understand that he is being embarrassed. The Gemara says, in. Now there is such a concept by children. Kadamara papa de michlam ele u michlam. If you embarrass them, they will be embarrassed. Or in other words, they are young enough, they're still innocent, and they don't feel or have sensations of busha. But nevertheless, if you remind them or embarrass them, they will feel that embarrassment. So they don't have what we call an embedded or innate sense of embarrassment. But if others embarrassment, they will feel that embarrassment. And again, we're going to see that later on in the Gemara. Rav Papa's refrain here is going to come up twice in the Amud Bet, and we'll explain it more then. Hachanami, so to in our case of here, is the michlamei umichlam. And if you embarrass them, they will be embarrassed. Or in essence, a katan does have busha, but now we have to reconcile that with the other statements that it seems like a katan is not a bar boshet, is not someone who is embarrassed. So there we concluded that even Rabbi Meir could possibly be the author of that braita, because if you explain gadol and katan as being someone of age and someone who is a minor, then you can explain how you have a katan that has boshet, because Rabbi Meir has broad categories of objective standards of busha, but over here where it's a gadol and a katan, clearly there's a difference between a gadol and a katan, and all Ketanim might have the same boshet, or all Gdolim might have the same boshet, but still there would be a difference between a Katan and a Gadol. Right now, we continue with the Sefer of the Mishnah that we started before, which the Gemara quoted today, which is Hamivayeshet Arum, someone who embarrasses someone who is naked. Hamivayeshet Asuma, someone embarrasses a Suma. Hamivayeshet Ayashen, or someone embarrasses someone who is sleeping. Chayav, you are responsible in all of those cases. V'yashan shibiyesh, someone who's sleeping and causes embarrassment, patur. Obviously there's a lack of kavanah. Nafal min agag v'ziko ubiyesh, someone fell off a roof and ended up damaging some victim down below, ubiyesh, and also embarrassed him. Chayav al anezek, he's responsible for the damage, upatur al boshet, and he's exempt from paying boshet, ad shehei mitkaven, because you need intent in order to be chayav. Now the truth is that this individual is not only patur mi boshet, he's also patur from the arba advarim, he's only chayav on the nezek. The fact that the Mishnah here only mentions busha is because it is topically relevant. But the truth is, the lack of kavanah also makes it that not only is he patur from boshet, he's also patur from the arba advarim. The Mishnah doesn't mention it, because the Mishnah's focus over here is boshet. So now the Gemara tries to understand this better. Tana banan, b'show arum chayav. If he embarrassed him while he is naked, you are chayav. Ve'enu domeh b'show arum, the b'show lavush. And there's no comparison between embarrassing someone who is naked to embarrassing someone who is dressed. B'show v'beit demechatz, chayav. Embarrassed him in the bathhouse, you are chayav. Ve'enu domeh b'show v'beit demechatz, the b'show b'shuk. And there's no comparison between embarrassing him in the bathhouse than there is to embarrassing him in the public domain and out in the marketplace. Now the Gemara goes back to understand that brayta. Amar mar, bishu arum chayav. If you embarrass him when he is naked, you are responsible. Gemara asks, arum barboshetu? Someone who's naked has any sense of embarrassment? Amar papa, my arum, what does it mean that he's naked over here? That a wind came along and took up his clothing. And this individual came along and did more than the wind had done, and caused embarrassment. Now, the way that Rashi reads this Gemara, Rashi took this Gemara at face value and literally the way that we read it, which is that when we're talking about an arum here, we're talking about the nakedness of an individual. And what the Gemara is suggesting over here is someone who walks around naked. How could you claim that they have any sense of embarrassment? The mere fact that they're walking around naked already shows you they don't care. If that's the case, then what is the point of paying boshet to an arum if they don't have any boshet? There's no sense of embarrassment that they have, the fact that they walk around in this manner. The Balei Tosafot are uncomfortable with that explanation because they say that even if someone walks around in that manner in a naked form, if you spit in their face, if you slap them in the face, that's still an embarrassment and still something that we'll call boshet to these individuals. As long as that embarrassment is somewhat segregated or separated from the fact that they're naked, they still will feel that embarrassment. And therefore the Tosafot gives an alternate explanation to what we read, Rashi's explanation, the little explanation of the Gemara, and says that the Braita here is speaking about someone who is undressing or causing to undress the other person. And that is what it means, b'sho arum chayav. He embarrassed him by making him naked. He is chayav. And to that, the Gemara's question comes along and says, I don't understand the scenario. Amar, b'sho arum chayav arum barboshetu? How could it be that you're embarrassing him by undressing him if he's already undressed, he's already naked? If he's naked, then you can't be undressing him. And then we get the answer here, which is Amar papa my arum atazika karchino lemane. A wind came and raised his clothing. Badu dalinu tvei. And then he came along and took them off completely or did a much greater removal of his clothing. Ubaishayan embarrassed him in that scenario. That's the way that Tosafot reads it. And the first way that he read it was the way that Rashi reads the Gemara over here. Baishova Beit HaMechatz, if he embarrasses him in the bathhouse, Chayav. Beit HaMechatz Bar Boshetu, once again, in the bathhouse, what type of embarrassment is there? People are walking around naked there. People don't have a sense of shame there. So then what exactly are you doing to embarrass him? So Rav Papa says, b'sho agav v'nar, that the way that Rashi would explain this is that he embarrassed him near the river, meaning that he was going to bathe himself in the river, and then somehow this individual caused him embarrassment in that state. So therefore, it's not a case where you're in the Beit HaMerchatz and everybody's walking around naked, and there, and you wouldn't have any sense of shame or embarrassment. Here we're talking about in a public venue, in a public domain, and therefore the embarrassment is much more real, or people do have a sense of shame when they're going into the Nahar. So that's the way, again, Rashi would explain it. Tosafot over here explains it similar to what he did in the previous case, which is that by Shoba Beit HaMerchatz means that he caused them to be naked in the bathhouse. And that's the Gemara's question. How could he cause them to be naked in the bathhouse if everybody's naked and walking around that way in the bathhouse? And so then Rav Papa explains it's not in a bathhouse, but rather him taking a bath al Gavanar. Okay, by Rabbi Avraham bar Mamel, by Shoya Shein Umeit Mahu. He embarrasses an individual while they're sleeping, but they never awaken from that sleep. They pass away in that sleep. What's the din? My Kami Baile. Gemara says, what's his question? Amar Rav Zvid, Hachi Kami Baile. This is his question. Mishum Kisufahu? Is boshet paid because you embarrassed the individual? Vamitle. And he passed away. Vilaitle Kisufahu. He no longer has embarrassment. Meaning, is the reason you pay boshet because of the shame and the embarrassment felt by the individual whom you embarrassed? Or demo mishum zilutahu? Or is it simply the denigration of the individual? Va'ozle. And now you've caused, through the denigration of the individual, you have weakened or reduced his value. The difference being that denigration is, in some senses, objective. It has nothing to do with the feelings of the individual who is being denigrated. It is simply a diminishment in the value of the individual or the standing of this individual in the eyes of the people through the denigration or the quote-unquote bullshit caused by this individual. And that you would pay whether the person passed away or not, because it has nothing to do with his personal feelings. On the other hand, if you think the bullshit relates to the shame felt by the person who's being embarrassed, if they're not awake, and they never awaken because they passed away, then there is nothing to pay once he has passed away. And that's the nature of the question that is being posed by Rav Avraham bar Mamel according to Rav Zvid. Tashma. Rabbi Meir Omer, Cheresh v'Katan yesh lan boshet. Both someone who is a Cheresh, who is unable to hear or speak, or a Katan, a minor, do have boshet. Shota ain lo boshet. Someone who is not of sound mind does not have boshet. So, I amart bishlama mishum ziluta. If you say that the real reason you're paying boshet is because of the denigration of the individual, hainu diktani Katan. Then I understand why you mentioned a Katan in the list of individuals who are entitled to boshet. Eliyamak mishum kisufa, if you say it has to do with the shame of the particular individual, kartan bar boshet do? Since when are minors and children, people get embarrassed? Elamai mishum ziluta, so what are you going to tell me? It's because of the denigration of the individual. Afilu shote nami. If that's the case, why isn't shote included? Amre shote in lecha boshet gudola mizu. When it comes to a shote, there's no greater embarrassment than the individual himself, meaning his behavior and the way he conducts himself, since he's not of sound mind, that there is no more boshet that the person could feel. Meaning that their standing vis-a-vis the public, the ziluta, is already manifest in the fact that they are a shoteh, and thereby someone else denigrating them is not going to increase that ziluta in any shape or form. Mikomakom. Nevertheless, okay, now you gave us an explanation, nifshut mina, we can conclude from that, mishum ziluto, that has to do with the denigration and not the shame felt by the individual. Di mishum kisufo, because it has to do with the shame of the particular individual, katar by kisufo, since when are the ktanim, or individuals who sense embarrassment or feel shame? When it says, gadam rav papa, and this is what we quoted earlier in the Gemara, like rav papa said, the michlum olei umichlam, that if you embarrass them, they will be embarrassed. Achanami, so to over here, mechlum ulei umichlam, that if you embarrass them, then they will feel embarrassed. So, the truth is that this makes it very subjective, meaning that tanim will depend on the precociousness of the child, and that precociousness of the child also makes them have sensations or feelings of shame and at different ages, depending on the nature of the child and the feelings of the child. And the evidence of that is that certain children have no problem walking around without clothing, and they can do that for many years. Other children feel very shamed about it, and early on they stop doing it. Now, even children who don't sense that there's something wrong, if someone does shame them and says, embarrasses them by what they're doing or the way they're conducting themselves, they will feel shame. So there is this subjective nature to the shame, and some children will feel it, and some children will not feel it. It has partly to do with age, partly to do with maturity, and partly to do with the precociousness or the natural awareness of the child about these issues and their feelings of embarrassment about them. And so therefore you can't have a katan that has boshet, even though generally you wouldn't assume that a katan has boshet. Now Rav Papa Amar, Hachi Kami Baili. Rav Papa explained the question of Rav Abba Bar Mamel differently than Rav Zvid and phrased it this way. Mishum kisufa di dehu, hamitle. It's because of his embarrassment, and he's dead now, so there's no embarrassment left. Or maybe the denigration or the embarrassment of the individual affects his entire family, or it impacts on the stature of the family. And based on that, it would apply even if he passed away. So tashma, cheresh v'katan, yesh lo boshet. Sheit shoteh, ein lo boshet. Again, the same writer that we quoted before. If you say it has to do with the familial embarrassment, then you understand why a katan has a din in boshet. You're talking about the embarrassment of the minor himself. Katan bar boshetu? Since one is a minor, someone who gets ashamed or someone who's embarrassed. Elamai mishum boshet the bnei mishpacha. Okay, so let's assume it has to do with the embarrassment of the family as a whole. Afilu shoteh nami. If that's the case, then a shoteh should also have that same impact. If you embarrass the shoteh, that should impact on the family as a whole, or embarrass the family as a whole. I said a shoteh in the chaboshe gdola mizo. The family is already suffering the pain and the embarrassment of this person who's not of sound mind, and therefore if you embarrass them, it's not going to change anything for the family. The boshe mishpacha has been maxed out already. So mikom agam, nifshat mina, we still should conclude from here, based on this mishum boshet mishpacha, that the real reason has to do with the familial embarrassment and not the personal embarrassment of the individual. The mishum kisufa, if it had to do with the personal embarrassment of the individual, katan bar kisufa, since when are minors individuals who feel shame or embarrassed? So Amar Rav Papa again here. This is the original Rav Papa before we kept quoting and saying, just like over here, Rav Papa says it, so too we'll say it over there. Rav Papa here is the source, Amar Rav Papa, ain't that yes, there is such a possibility. The michmalei umichlam. You embarrass a katan or a minor, they will feel shame or embarrassment, even though they may not have that natural sense of shame. V'hatanyo, as Rashi points out, v'hatanyo has been yichuta. This is supportive of that statement of a papa. Rabbi Omer, cheresh yesh lo boshet, shoteh ein lo boshet. A cheresh does have embarrassment, a shoteh does not have embarrassment. Katan pi'amim yesh lo, pamim ein lo. Sometimes he does have a din in boshet, sometimes he does not have a din in boshet. Now, that's the end of the Braita, and it's seemingly supportive of Rav Papa in the fact that it differentiates between certain ketanim that do and certain ketanim that don't. And then you can see here on the Masoret HaShas, he adds in that this next statement is not from the Braita, but rather Rav Papa's solution or reconciliation of the Braita. Ha de mechlu mulei o mechlam, ha de mechlu mulei velo mechlam. Has to do with, if you embarrass or shame them, do they feel that sense of shame or embarrassment? Some ketanim do, some ketanim don't. And again, it's partially to do with the age, but more importantly, connected to the nature of the individual and the precociousness of the individual. And so Rav Papa makes that distinction, which solves the seeming stira here about the boshet of a katan, as to sometimes he does have and sometimes he doesn't have. And that braita is supportive of Rav Papa's differentiation. Rav Papa explains to us what exactly that differentiation is. I mean, vayeshet tesuma, someone who embarrasses a blind individual. In our Mishnah, it says he is chayav. The Gemara says matnitan d'lok Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah certainly cannot be altered by Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, suma ain lo boshet. It's suma does not have embarrassment. V'kach chayav Rabbi Yehuda poter michayve galiot umichayve malkiot umichayve mitot beitin. That a suma does not have a din in any of these. It doesn't go to galut. He doesn't get malkot, and he doesn't get techiyuv mitot beitin. My time of the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position over here that he says that a suma is not entitled to boshet? It says, Gamar, einecha me'edim zomamim. Learns out Gzeresh Shava from Edim Zomamim. The pasuk by Edim Zomamim, which we actually have mentioned recently, says, Lo tachos einecha, nefesh b'nefesh, ayin b'ayin, shein b'shein, yad b'yad, regel b'rogel. So you see there, it says, Lo tachos einecha. And over here, by the case of boshet, in Parshat Ki Teitzeh, where it speaks about the woman who intercedes on behalf of her husband. Over there it says, V'katzota et kapa, you will cut off her hand, which we learn means b'mamon, lo tachos einecha. You have that same phrase as lo tachos einecha, And just like by Edim Zomimim, Mahatam Sumin Lo, Sumim certainly cannot be Edim because they can't be witnesses if they can't see it. If they didn't see it, then they can't be witnesses. They're disqualified. Avhacha Sumim Lo. So to over here, with regards to Boshet, the Sumim are excluded. Now the Bali at Tosafot over here asks, well, if that's the case, that we're learning it out from Edim Zomimim, if you're disqualified as an aid, then you're also disqualified from Boshet. Why don't we say that women don't have a din in Boshet? Krovim, relatives, don't have a din in Boshet. All of these individuals who are disqualified from being Edim, they should also not have din in Boshet. So Tosafot in the end says, yeah, the Gezer Shabbat comes from Einecha, Einecha, and therefore it's limited to things that are connected to Einecha, which is the Suma. Other people are psulim, they do, it's not connected to their einecha, it's connected to other things that they are psul, or gzerat hakatuv that they are psul. And therefore, then we wouldn't learn out the gzer shava einecha einecha. Einecha einecha tells us, yes, who's disqualified from an eid zomim, or from eidut, is also disqualified, or doesn't have a din in boshet, that's only if it's connected to einecha, because that is the source of that gzer shava. Now the Gemara goes on to ask in Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, how do we know that the Suma is patur from all these other things? The Chayvei Galiot is also patur from Galut to Tanya, because it says over there by Galut in Sefer Bamidbar, it says below Rote that he didn't see, that it was accident, it was unintentional killing, because he didn't see. Prat the Suma, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, the exclusion of a Suma according to Rabbi Yehuda, the implication, the diuk is that he didn't see here, but he sees in other scenarios. But of course, the Sumad not only doesn't see here, he doesn't see in other scenarios, and therefore he's excluded from Chiyuv Galut. Rabbi Meir Omer, the Rabot at the Sumad, below road comes to include a Sumad. My time with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Amalcha asher yavoa teireeyu bayar lachtov etzim. He comes into the forest to cut trees or to cut wood when his friend is there. Vafilu Sumad. That's all inclusive. It means anybody who comes in, including a blind person. Katav Rachmana below road. Then the Torah says that he didn't see in this scenario, that is, Lemeute, comes to exclude the case of a Suma. Rabbi Meir Katav Rachmana below Ra'ot, Lemeute. Lo Ra'ot comes to be an exclusion, but Katav Rachmana believe that he did it unintentionally. Lemeute, that's also a miut. Havi miut, achar miut, it is two miutim, two exclusions, vein miut achar miut, elo the Rabot. You only have a miut achar miut, comes to include, and therefore a Suma is included, or there is a din of galut for a suma that kills unintentionally. Rabbi Yehuda, how will be da'at? What does he do with that? Prat limit kavein hu da'at. It's coming to exclude someone who did it intentionally. That's what it's for. That's why it's telling you. That's the essence of a shogeg. Chayve mitot beitin. When it comes to capital punishments of beitin, the suma is also patur. Ache rotzeach, rotzeach michayve galut yot. He has a zeres shova between Rotzeach, Rotzeach, that is found by the Chiyuvei Galiot. Because by the Chiyuvei Galiot it says, Tachin lecha derech v'shilashtet gvul ha'atzecha, asher yanchilcha Hashem lekecha, v'ayu lenu shama kol Rotzeach. He uses the term Rotzeach by Chiyuvei Galiot. That's what talking about someone who's running away to an ir miklat. And then by Chiyuvei Mitat Beitin, it says, Lo tichu kol for the nefesh Rotzeach, asher rasha lamut ki mot yumat. So you see the term Rotzeach is used by someone who's a murderer, which would result in capital punishment by Beit Din. And you say the word Rotzeach is used by Chiyuvei Galiot. And therefore the Gzer Shavah says that just like a Suma, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is excluded from the punishment of Galut, he's also excluded from the capital punishment for murder. Chayvei Malkiot. How do you know that he's also excluded from Chayvei Malkiot? Ata Rasha Rasha Mechayvei Mitot Beit Din. Gzer Shava of Rasha Rasha from Chiyuvei Mitid Beitin. By Malkot it says Im Bin Hakot Rasha. And by the case of Mitah it says Asher Hu Rasha Lamut. And so you see here that there's again a connection of Gzer Shava between Rotzeach and the case of Malkot. And just like Rotzeach, which we know from Chiyuvei Galiot, a Sumaz Potur, so to over here by Chiyuvei Malkot, there's also a exclusion or Suma is not subject to those Malkiot. As the Bali Tosfot point out over here, this Gzer Shava of Rasha Rasha is also learned by the Chachamim. Just they don't learn the same din as Rabbi Yehuda because they don't have him being Patur by Chiyuvei Galiot, since they don't have him being Patur by Chiyuvei Galiot, doesn't carry forward to Rotzeach, and then doesn't carry forward to Malkot. But the Gzer Shava, Rasha, Rasha, they use for other Limudim. Just happens to be that this Limud, they don't have because they don't believe in a source being Patur for a Suma, in that by Galiot or by Rotzeach, they don't think the Suma is Patur, so they're not going to think he's Patur by Malkot, because even though there is this Gzer Shava, there is no din like that in Rotzeach or Chiyuvei Galiot. Now, Tosfot over here points out that Rabbi Yehuda's belief is that when he says a Suma in Lo Boshet, and this is something that the Gemara mentioned beforehand, even though it rejected it at one point, when it says Suma in Lo Boshet, that means it's Suma Shibyesh Patur. That means the Suma that causes embarrassment is Patur. Aval Mevayeshet the Suma Chayav. Someone who embarrasses a Suma is Chayav. And that is how the Gemara knows that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Because our Mishnah says, HaMivayesh et HaSuma is Chayav. Someone embarrasses the Suma is Chayav. So then, if that is the case, Rabbi Yehuda can be reconciled with our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda believes that a Suma is Patur from causing Boshet, but one who embarrasses the Suma is Chayav. And that's what our Mishnah says. The Mishnah says that HaMivayesh et HaSuma is Chayav. And therefore, if you look in Rashi, Rashi explains why the Gemara thinks Rabbi Yehuda cannot be the author of a Mishnah is a diuk out of the Mishnah and not from the explicit statement of the Mishnah. And that is that, Armakdinan Kantani, the Mishnah says, Yashen Shibyesh, someone who was sleeping and caused embarrassment is Patur. Ubisuma Lotani Yochi. Our Mishnah doesn't say that a Suma and a Yashen that caused embarrassment are Patur, but simply someone who is Yashen. Hilkach Suma Chayav. From our Mishnah, implications, or the inferences, the fact that a Suma would be Chayav if he embarrassed someone else. And that diuk is what makes the Mishnah impossible, or makes it untenable to have Rabbi Yehuda as the author of the Mishnah, because Rabbi Yehuda believes that a Suma who embarrasses is Patur. So again, the Tosafot tells us over here, and it's clear from Rashi, based on how Rashi says that the Gemara knows that our Mishnah argues on Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda only has one statement about the Suma, which is that the Suma who causes embarrassment is Patur. But one who embarrasses the Suma is Chayav, and our Mishnah says the same thing, and Rabbi Yehuda agrees with that part of our Mishnah. The problem for Rabbi Yehuda is that the only exemption given for one who embarrasses others is a Yashen, is someone who's sleeping. But someone who's blind is not granted that exemption. If that's the case, Rabbi Yehuda cannot be the author of our Mishnah, because our Mishnah thinks that a Suma that embarrasses is Chayav. Ryuda thinks that Suma who embarrasses is Patur. Okay, we're going to stop here on the last line of Pei Vav and Bet, because the Gemara is going to continue with other Braitot that expand Rabbi Yehuda's view of a Suma being Patur to Patur Mikola Torah Kula. And not just about these individual items that we mentioned over here, but we'll continue with that in tomorrow's daf.